Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast, broadcasting from the oldest grace-based web presence in the universe, and presenting the Christianity Free Gospel. This is Daniel Rouse. Would you welcome with me again the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Lilborn Williams?
Well, thank you, Daniel Rouse. Good morning, and how are you today?
I am doing, as a friend of mine always used to say, stupendous. How are you?
Stupendous. I always say marvelous.
Marvelous. Marvelous. Yeah. Simply marvelous.
Marvelous, yes. And then I just stand back with my arms spread open wide and smile. It's like, see?
Marvelous.
It's obvious. I'm marvelous.
I remember reading in the Bible when they would, when Jesus would always say, behold. And I remember someone talking about once behold is, look at me. So you're in good company. Look at me.
Yes. Well, I think when Jesus said, behold, it was about what he was talking about, not look at me. But I like the other one better, actually. Yeah.
Well, how are things in East Tennessee, the secret city?
They are as secretive as ever, and a lot of things going on, growing. Goodness gracious, construction everywhere. I think there's another government project going on, like the Manhattan Project back in the late 30s or something. Because I'm telling you, we have there are no houses to rent and no houses to buy.
Yeah.
If you're buying a house, it is under construction now. Because the housing prices went up so quickly that everybody who had lived in homes for many years and even decades, if they were ever going to sell, they did. Mm. And they were putting it on the market for inflated prices and getting 8, 9, 10 offers of prices even above that. So had one bought a home here 2.5 years ago, when one came here, one would have made a lot of money, but one did not do that.
Is that the one who wrote the book on one?
Yeah, that's the one problem. Yes, it's the one in the saying. It's really crazy around here. I don't know. We're becoming North Knoxville. We're just in a unique place here. It's kind of like the last town before you go into the areas where you're just not sure if you might come out alive or not if you go any further north than this town. Next stop is Rocky Top, Tennessee.
Mm.
Yeah, just north of here. Rocky Top, you'll always be home, sweet home to me. Yeah, that's just the next town north of us here. And all kinds of strange stories about that place. But anyway, we're here and all things are well. And it's still East Tennessee. And I will be danged, we're still having cold days and we are into May.
You know, the housing market is the same over here in Green Bay, too. I mean, it's they are making subdivisions just like crazy. Of course, some of the listeners may or may not know that I work for a busing company. And so we are responsible for getting all the students to school. And I mean, we are constantly getting new routes developed and different things because there's total subdivisions that are just blowing up. I mean, the school district where I'm working in, they started a subdivision here maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and the thing is completely full already. All the lots are sold, and they're finishing up the houses on it. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's it really is a housing boom going across the nation, I think, with a few exceptions to that. So it's crazy. Goodness, just in 3 months, the stock market's gone up 5,000 points, and I mean, it is, this is crazy. I don't know what's going on. I used to kind of have an understanding of what the stock market was connected to, but then when all of the businesses closed their doors and the stock market stepped going up, kept going up, it's like, I definitely am out of touch with what economy is all about in this country anymore. Because I thought when businesses started shuttering their doors and everything starts closing up, that means stock market goes down because it's based on business. But we now have a stock market that is separate from Main Street for sure. It doesn't have anything to do with what's going on Main Street. Now, I can't tell you what it has to do with, but it has to do with money that's bigger than you and I can even think. And what goes on in little businesses and things like that, even if this whole chain's closed down, it doesn't affect that realm at all because it's just it is the big money that's trading money, not the little guy. And the little guy's normally going to get excited and jump into it and say, oh, let's go make some money. And they jump into it. And next thing you know, their little thing is all gone and their money's all gone. And it's just the guys at the top get more money then. So if I sound a little cynical, it's because I went through that process.
Well, and speaking of money, Michael, we are on the end of our pledge drive. So speaking of all of that big money coming to the top, send in your money to the top in Jesus' name.
Send it in. And we are far from the end of the rainbow and the pot of gold that we were supposed to find in the process of this pledge drive. But we do appreciate everything that everyone has done and is continuing to do. We appreciate your help. We are trying to put our heads together to come up with the most effective ways to platform the gospel in this day and age. I admit that I am not savvy about these things. They frustrate me more than anything. And but we are launching an investigative part of this. We want to get everybody involved that can help us to understand. I just want the most effective way to reach people. I think everybody's pretty well frustrated with Facebook. Everybody and many people for many different reasons, they're frustrated with Facebook. We just want to be able to share the gospel in the most effective way that we can. Our trips to Canada, of course, have been curtailed by COVID. We look forward to those visits again. When this is under control enough to where that we can get up there. Until then, we still need to find more platforms that are more, gives us greater access to people. The one thing that I can tell you, Daniel, about the Gospel Revolution is if we reach people's ears, we have success.
Mm-hmm.
You being an example of that. Nardo Scabiti being an example of that. Don Beresford Bartlett being a result of that. One single tape that one single person happened to hand him one day on the book of Galatians. And I was, and during the tape, he read that, For I testify again to every man that is circumcised that he's a debtor to do the whole law. Christ is become of no effect to you. Whosoever of you are justified by the law, you've fallen from grace. And all I did is point out that you do not fall from grace when you break the law. You fall from grace when you keep the law and think that it adds something to your life. I mean, it totally changed his life. I mean, so if we reach people's ears, we have a message that really helps people to come out of that. Let me say also, we do not claim to have all of the answers to everything. Goodness, we are in research. Oh my gosh. If I would say if there was a need in the GR, it would be for a research team. I would be very happy to have a place where that, you know, on at least on occasion, maybe for a week long, that we, as many of us as wanted to be a part of it, would come not to teach and not to listen, but to research. And all of us just for a week come together on certain topics and research out what we think we know and things we know we don't know, and have breakfast, lunch, and dinner together, and come together at different times, everybody breaking off into different, not particularly organized groups, but people who were interested in a certain subject getting together and really getting into that and coming back to the whole group and letting us know what we're learning. And And I would love to do something like that. Right now, that's just the very forefront of where my thoughts are in the advancement of the gospel. Number one, we need to reach ears, but number two, we need research. We have got so much research. There's two subjects that I'm wanting to get into that I think are so vitally important. And one is dominion theology, and the other one is covenant theology. And these things are things that I've been a part of in the past, but I'm just now beginning to look back and formulate that these were actual official doctrines that I was probably on the fringes of and not in a church that was a dominion theology church or a covenant theology church, but was affected by these doctrines and was persuaded of things because of these doctrines. We need to understand them. They are impactful worldwide and in people's personal lives on a daily basis. And we need to understand them because they are they're very deceptive, to tell you the truth, and they're very prevalent in today's Christian world.
Yeah, and like you said, there's so many things going on right now. I mean, just in some of the discussions that we've introduced, you know, like James and the lineage that resided there in the temple.
All of that to do, yes.
Yeah, we have that. And then you and Don started a discussion just recently on the book of Colossians, and it's all like,
We are caught in the currents and the tides and the waves and it just seems like a time where we need to call all the recruits together and say, you know, here, this is that we're being swamped. We're being swamped by understanding. We're being swamped by understanding just a little of something. We need to understand everything about because it is major. These are major, major things. You mentioned the book of Colossians. We're in the process of publishing the book of Colossians without the pseudographical writings in it. Now, that's been happening in the middle of all the happenings of happenings of studying, Galatians and looking at the pseudographical writings of Ephesians and Romans and Hebrews. And then suddenly there was this hard right turn into Colossians, and it just fell into place in a most powerful way. And I think if it isn't already out there at this point of when this show actually comes out, it will be soon. And oh my gosh, oh, you are going to be thrilled to read through at least one of Paul's letters. Now, we don't find any pseudographical inference into the book of Galatians. But the book of Colossians, oh my gosh, was it hacked and hacked up. But you're going to love reading through it, because some of those powerful gospel is in Colossians, but some of the most oppressive theology is also in Colossians. And we have ferreted that all out. It's just, it's wonderful.
So this is your wonderful donations, hard at work. We are very, very busy here at the Gospel Revolution. I was just observing the other day about our videos that we do on Facebook, and we are able to throw a few dollars at them, and they just, they blow up. I mean, we get over 100,000 views. There are some of the videos that Facebook doesn't cooperate with us, and we have to work and re-examine how to make it through their guidelines in order to get the video on the ad system there. But the videos that make it through, I mean, we're getting over 100,000 views. So we want you to know that we are very much hard at work to serve you and bring you the clearest gospel that we can, and get that out to the masses all throughout the world. So again, thank you. These are just some examples of how your donations are hard at work.
Yes, and we thank you guys so very much.
So, Michael, we have been going through the book of Galatians, and last week we took a little break from that verse-by-verse discussion to talk about some prepositional phrases, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
I loved that, too, yeah.
But the week before, we made it a whole whopping verse, but I have to tell you, I was surprised at how much you could learn in one verse in Galatians chapter 3.
Well, when you take into consideration that this very powerful letter of Paul's is the one where he addressed James, Peter, and John, and he dressed them down, and he let people know what they had done. He let people know how awful it was. He let people know they had seduced his own Barnabas. He tried to get across these points. And so we have then the translators who are trying their best to homogenize this, and they're putting in words that don't sound quite as bad as the Greek actually brings out that this was, this was no milquetoast letter that Paul was, you know, trying to hint at anything. There's no hints here. Paul had to say what he had to say about James, Peter, and John and their doctrines and what they did not know about the gospel. If you want to know what James, Peter, and John didn't know about the gospel, read the book of Galatians. Because that's what Paul is very classically bringing out here, is the correction to the understanding of the gospel to the Galatians. It just amazes me that Paul said that James, Peter, and John's impact and influence with their teaching had dissolved the image of Christ right out of the people. It was gone. They no longer had the image of Christ in their constitution, in their sights, in their the way that they looked at things was not looking at things from a position of Christ in them. They were looking at things from a position of having to attain. if you look at all of the pseudographical writings that we've been able to identify so far, and that's what we, what we found in Colossians, was that it takes Paul's writings, which are so powerful, such powerful declarations of truth, and then starts in, well, now if you're risen with Christ, well, if you're really, if you're really saved, and then you'll do this, and then all of that turns into, you know, slaves obey your masters. And the fact that they go into this thing, and the one that surprised me the most in Colossians was it went all the way from, well, if you then be risen from Christ, these are the things that let people know that you are who you say you are. It went all the way from there, and within a few verses was telling slaves to obey their masters as though they were Christ himself and God himself, but then told the masters, then now you need to treat your slaves right, knowing that you have a master in heaven. It's like, wait a minute. So these slaves don't even get a master in heaven. The only master they have is on earth. Their master has a master. And that's exactly the way that it's put. And that's where all of this teaching actually comes from, of obeying authority, because and I remember being taught that. I remember people saying to me, who I was in situations that I was under their quote authority, that I was not to be not to concern myself by whether or not what I was told to do was right or wrong, because I would never face God for what I was doing, because it would be them who was facing God for what I was doing, because they told me to do it. That's in Paul's letter, you know. So obviously not Paul.
Wow, that's amazing.
So we've got that, and so this letter, as we go on into Colossians chapter, as we go on into Galatians chapter 3, we want to remind you that as we read, remember that Paul is still addressing people, that he wants to understand the gospel he teaches as opposed to the gospel, which is not a gospel at all. I'm just re-quoting Paul, which is not a gospel at all, which was brought in deviously into these people's lives. And he is trying to straighten out this mess. This is designed so that Christ can be formed in them again. Because James, Peter, and John has caused the reality of Christ in them to be destroyed.
So last time that we were here in Galatians chapter 3, we went through chapter 3 and verse 1, which reads, "O foolish Galatians," and Michael pointed out that the rest of this verse is a question. "Who has bewitched you that you should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed among you as crucified?" What a question. And I think as we go through here, there's a few more questions that are being presented.
By virtue that this is presented as questions, we don't know that this, the people who added these, whether or not they are correct, we're reading them through as though they are. That's just a point of honesty with you. All punctuation is that way throughout the New Testament, because it's not that punctuation shouldn't be here. It's that what we see as punctuation shows up in the body of the words of the Greek. So they don't have these little marks and things to give you direction as to what that word means. So there is indication in the Greek whether or not it's a question of what we would call a question or these things, but they don't have those particular marks in them. So sometimes they did get these wrong. But these being so consistent here, down for several verses here, Paul's got some questions, and the questions that he has is in direct relationship to the misconceptions they have received from James, Peter, and John.
So are you ready? Should we jump into verse
2? Let's roll it.
All right. So here is verse 2, and I guess you just stop me whenever you want to make a comment. This is only I want to learn from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Are you so foolish, having begun in the Spirit, are you now being made perfect by the flesh? Have you suffered so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain? Verse 5, therefore, he who supplies the Spirit to you and works miracles among you, does he do it by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Just as Abraham believed God, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness.
Very good. Let's go down. Let's take this chunk of questions. Well, we've already handled the first question, and now we're going into question two in verse 2. And that is, he says, I only want to learn one thing from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law, or by the hearing of faith? Now, this transformed into something else because, see, we were presented that this was either or, right? Did you get it by the law, or did you get it by faith? Which one? That is imposed because what Paul is asking here is, did they get it by either way? Did you get it by the law, or did you get it by faith? How did you get the Spirit? Was it by you keeping the law, or was it by your faith? Now, what we find out, as Paul has taught, is it was by neither. You did not get the Spirit by your faith, and you did as the same as you equally did not get the Spirit by the law. You equally did not get it by your faith. This is the tragedy of personal faith. This is the tragedy of a personal covenant. One of the things we'll be covering when we go through covenant theology is that you're not in a covenant with God. You're not in covenant with Jesus. Jesus is in covenant with God. We are beneficiaries of that covenant, but we are not in covenant. And Hebrews makes that so clear, and he explains why, that he did not enter into a covenant based on faith. Now, remember, this covenant is based on faith, but he did not enter a covenant based on faith with us. He didn't enter into any kind of covenant with us based on anything, because he tried several according to Hebrews. But because he could swear by no greater, he swore by himself, that between two unmovable forces that he established covenant. And it is between those two immovable forces that we have great confidence. We could not have confidence before God if this was based on us keeping the law or based on our covenant of faith. Because the covenant is a faith covenant that cannot be escaped. So the issue becomes, whose faith has established this covenant? Whose faith brought the Spirit? How did the Spirit get to you? Did it get to you by the law, or did it get to you by your faith?
That word hearing, I was looking here in the Greek interlinear, and it points out the fact that that word hearing means to pay attention to, and in essence, to respond to faith. So did you receive this by the works of the law or by responding to faith? And of course, I think about what you brought out in Romans chapter 10, that this is what is being preached, the word of faith.
Yes.
This is the message that's being preached, that if you confess with your heart, believe with your heart and confess with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, you shall be saved. That's what was being taught. That is that response to faith. And, but he was saying, Paul says, but I say, and the scriptures say, yes, you know, that it was Christ's faith. And I think that's the same thing that's happening here, is he's saying, this is, it's not about whether Christ's faith was effective or not. It was, did you do this by your response to faith?
Yes. I think that Paul's teaching here is in a direct correlation to his teaching in Romans, especially out of chapter 10, where he challenged them in greater detail on this subject. He says, you know, because, hey, it's written, whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Isn't that by you hearing and you doing something? But then he adds all of these caveats as to why you can't put a lot of trust in that. You know, well, gosh, then how can he call? How can somebody call on somebody in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe unless they hear? There is a conundrum there that cannot be overcome. And to the point where Christianity is read over that. You can't believe in whom you don't know, and you can't know in whom you have not heard.
Mm.
Basically, he said, it can't be you. It can't be you responding to a call, that everybody that gets saved is the ones that call upon the Lord, because don't you have to know him to call upon him? Mm. And if it's just damned if you do, damned if you don't, if you will.
Yeah, and of course, he part of that argument there is, too, that he was found among those who didn't call upon him. He was found upon those who didn't seek him.
Yeah, that wonderful end to chapter 10, which is so conclusive, going into, so then faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. That's, and see, that's what we're talking about right here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a question. So then faith cometh by hearing and hearing by the word. Then comes the question. But I say unto you, have they not heard? So we're going back to this hearing. And only reason we're going back here is because this is hand in glove, if you will, to Galatians. He says, yes, verily, their sound went into all the earth and their words into the ends of the world. But I say unto you, did not Israel know? For Moses said, I will provoke you to jealousy by them that are no people, and by a foolish nation I will anger you. But Isaiah is very bold and saith, I was found of them that sought me not, I was made manifest to them that ask not after me. So he's addressing the foolishness of the Galatians. The foolishness of the Galatians to think that they may have kept the law good enough, or that their faith may have been good enough. And let me tell you something. If you think that your faith got you saved, you might as well think that you've done well enough with the law. And on both points, you are foolish to think that it is your faith. Verse 3 kind of affirms that, doesn't it, Daniel?
Yes. Are you so foolish? Having begun in the spirit and now being made perfect by the flesh.
Yeah. So, what does Paul call being made perfect by the flesh? Your faith and your obedience is now being perfected by the flesh.
Mm.
That's the flesh. When you think it's your faith, that's your flesh. Your faith is your flesh. Your obedience is your flesh. And we didn't get into this through our flesh. We got in through the veil of the flesh of Jesus Christ, which Hebrews says was the veil that we entered in through his flesh. Are you so foolish, having begun in the spirit? Are you now made perfect by the flesh? So the two things he just challenged, he is saying to them, that those your attempts at faith and your attempts at the law are attempts to be made perfect by the flesh.
And I think, you know, this is the theme that we're getting here, is that the Galatian church, because of Paul's being the pastor, if you will, of course, we're using these terms, you know, church and pastor, just to describe the situation. But Paul is responsible for teaching these people at Galatia that about the Spirit and how really the gospel message. And now he's saying what you're doing through not thinking is you're going back to something mm-hmm. that you're rebuilding again, that which we've destroyed. And so he's talking about you were understanding this. Christ was formed in you, in yes. your understanding. You were aware of this. And now, are you so foolish that you're going to throw that away? Mm-hmm. And now you're going to try to do it on your own?
Yeah. And is continuing the theme, somebody has taken this away from you.
Yes.
You have allowed that. Don't forget the characters involved. You've allowed James, Peter, and John to place you back in the flesh, or the attempt to be perfect through the flesh. Now, remember also, what did James, Peter, and John present to them that was against Paul's teachings? Paul's teachings taught the people at Galatia that they began in the Spirit, that it was the Spirit that did for them what they needed to do. James, Peter, and John comes along and says, no, you have to believe, and yeah. says, no, you have to keep the law. So these are the two doctrines that in the to the church at Galatia and also to the church at Rome. Mm-hmm. That's the big subject, is obedience to the law and personal faith. And Paul is shooting that down in both of these letters. These doctrines of you've got to believe, and you've got to obey, that's James, Peter, and John's doctrine in the book of Galatians. And you got to believe, and you got to obey in the book of Romans. That is definitely Peter's doctrine. Peter is the one who established the church at Rome, and Paul is going in behind him. It's really funny because in the book of Galatians, Paul's saying, James, Peter, and John came in behind me to undermine my work. And in the book of Romans, basically, Paul's going in saying, I'm here to undermine the work of James, Peter, and John. So, because Paul was the one who established this work at Galatia, and Peter was the one that established the one at Rome. And for him to say the things that he said to the church at Rome, so powerfully, this powerful understanding, that it is not belief that got us in. It is unbelief that got us in. It is the absolute security. We are secure in the fact that we were all brought into unbelief, that we might be that God might have mercy upon all of us.
That's good preaching, brother. Hallelujah.
It is. I am free from my own faith. Oh man. Oh, just take a minute and breathe deeply and just say it out loud. Thank you, Jesus. I am freed not only from the law, I am equally freed from my own faith.
Yes.
Yes.
Amen. Hallelujah. Verse 4, have you suffered so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain?
So here we find out that Paul says that there was a degree of suffering that they went through from embracing his gospel. Now, Daniel, is there anything there about that word suffered?
It actually is experience, to undergo an experience, usually difficult and normally with the implication of physical and psychological suffering. You know, I think that the experience here that he's talking about, I think it has to do with, remember the three parties that are being involved here. You got the believing Jews, the non-believing Jews, and then you have the believing Gentiles, if you will. And these are kind of all at work. And so there was Paul coming in and doing what he was doing. You know that there was an opposition to this new faith, if you will, that he's presenting, the Spirit.
Yes.
Being worked in the Spirit. And both the believing Jews and the non-believing Jews are contesting this. They're fighting this. And I think that was some of the suffering that they were dealing with, is this opposition that's even being talked about here in Galatians. You know, they've already gone through the opposition of the the persecution from the believing Jews and the non-believing Jews. And so you made it through that, you found your freedom, and now you want to go back. And was all that done in vain? Was all of that without purpose? Was that all without meaning?
Well, and I'm sure Paul is comparing this to his own suffering, because Paul openly said that he suffered for making this stand. And it wasn't just against Jews. It was believing Jews. It was believing people. It was those who were requiring believing, those who were requiring circumcision, those that were requiring obedience to the law. And by Paul standing up, I mean, this is the single voice we have out of the New Testament. And of course, Apollos also, though, in the book of Hebrews, that decries this presumption of personal faith being needed for redemption. Paul saw this as free and clear of personal involvement. Just like said in Romans, he says, you know, it says, call upon the name of the Lord and you'll be saved. But number one, that was written in the Old Testament, is what he was pointing out. And then he began to point out just how impossible that was. That's just not, it's not rational to think that that's how salvation took place, was by those who invited Jesus into their heart, if you will, or those who were asking for it or looking for it or searching for it. Because how could they search and look for something from somebody they didn't know? How could they ask for something from somebody they never knew? And how could they come to know him by believing in him, whom they never knew? I mean, it just, it really is crazy tunes when you finally slow down and allow what Paul said about that subject in the book of Romans. And he's saying about it here. Paul's talking about this entire persuasion of personal faith and obedience to be absolutely foolish.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Galatians chapter 3 and verse 5 reads, "Therefore, he who supplies the Spirit to you and works miracles among you, does he do it by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith?"
And you know, Daniel, let me tell you, hearing you read it that way to me is just such a delight, because I remember the first time that I was able to see that he was questioning both. He wasn't giving the option of one or the other. He's questioning both. As we've pointed out, the teaching in Romans confirms this, because Paul challenged this issue of personal faith and personal faith being a part of this. But let's drop back into this verse just a little bit. And who's he talking about? "He therefore that ministereth." You know, I used to think this was the guy who was up front, you know, that was conducting the service, and he was ministering the Spirit, and he's working miracles. So whoever's doing that, you know, you can't work miracles by the law. You got to do it by faith. If you're coming to, well, they never worked any miracles, so I guess they didn't have any faith. I think the kind of the proof was in the pudding, as they used to say. But let's break this down just a little bit. "He therefore that ministereth." What is the word ministereth in the Hebrews or in the Greek?
Ooh, it's a six-syllable word. Epikora jaio.
Do I have to interpret now since you spoke in tongues?
It means to furnish, besides, that is fully supply, to aid or contribute, to add, minister, nourishment, nourishment unto.
Wow. So it's the one that supplied you the Spirit. I don't think that's talking about the guy you invited to speak at church.
Nope.
I don't know of one who has supplied the Spirit except Christ himself. So Christ has ministered the Spirit, and what else has Christ done? And worketh miracles. Well, so what is the word miracles here? Is there any chance that this is anything different than what, you know, when I read this, all that's talking about, it evokes the very same thoughts about miracles that I would think, but it just seems to not be in place here.
Oh my gosh.
What do you got?
It is the word dunamis. Interesting.
Dunamis.
And of course, it means force, power. Mr. Strong's translates it specifically miraculous power, used by implication as a miracle itself. But the words that are translated are power, mighty work, mm-hmm. strength. Miracle is only translated dunamis 7 times. Might, virtue, mighty.
Wow.
Of course, what comes to mind is, and you shall receive dunamis power when the Spirit comes upon you.
And yet, there is a Greek word for the word miracles. If this was the word miracles, there's actually a Greek word for it. I just pulled that up. The word miracles in every other place, in most places where the word miracles, and I'm only looking at the plural, I didn't look up the word miracle, but the word miracles is the Greek word semion. And the word semion means wonders and signs, and it means what we think a miracle to be. And in this particular one, the beginning of miracles, Simeon did Jesus in Cana of Galilee. So this term miracles, if this was supposed to be miracles, there was a word to use.
Mm.
But instead, the Greek tells us that so how would this read then? So we're not talking about two different subjects or people. He therefore that supplies the Spirit, and the term worketh. But since we're going into this, we might as well look at that.
Yeah, worketh is energio, means to be actively efficient, effectual.
Wow. So he that gave you the Spirit and makes it powerful among you.
That's good.
So he that gave you the Spirit and makes it powerful among you. Now, how is the Spirit powerful among us?
Raising the dead, growing out legs,
and we don't even have
healing the blind.
I know. But we don't have to do anything to guess. It's in the next verse what
dunamis
power is for. Even as Abraham believed God and it was counted to him for righteousness. Man. So what did Jesus supply? He supplied the Spirit that caused it to be extremely powerful in the distribution of righteousness. That is some good stuff.
You know, and that, of course, goes along with Paul's teaching in Romans. If I can read chapter 1, verse 16 says, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power, the dunamis. Of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek, for in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith
in
to faith.
In the dunamis,
Just as it is written, the just shall live by," and of course we talked about that last week, "his faith."
Yeah. So it's in the dunamis that righteousness is revealed, and that's exactly the same thing Paul's saying in different words here, as we've pointed out. This is Paul saying the same thing to a different group of people, and because of their experiences, he's saying it just a little bit differently. Now, if the word miracles, as we know it, was the word that was to be translated here, as I have shared with you, There's a word for it. There is a Greek word for it. And it was not used here, or it should not have been used here. This, the beginning of miracles, did Jesus. That is the word miracles, semeion. And so the semeion is not here. This word miracles here is completely mistranslated for the use of the verse. Maybe to help confuse us about the matter, I don't know.
As I'm scrolling through here, about the 100 times that that word dunamis is used, 95% of the time, it's power, it's might, yeah, it's strength. You've only got a couple times where it's talking about miracles. Oh my gosh. And Michael, this is going to expand a new study. I mean, as if we don't have enough to study now.
No, don't tell me.
Like in 1 Corinthians, where he talks about the apostles, the prophets, the teachers, and the worker of miracles. That's the word dunamis. To another, the working of miracles. To another, the working of dunamis, of power. Wow. How about this one? When Paul worked mighty miracles in Acts, that's that same word, dunamis. Oh, this is cool.
It is cool. And the way that Paul has tied this word dunamis to the understanding of righteousness, the power of the Spirit of righteousness. Paul was going around working righteousness.
I love that.
Yeah. Mm. And he did do that.
He got her done.
He definitely did do that. And isn't it amazing that verse 6 reminds us that this comparison of it's not your faith, it's the faith of God, and Abraham is type and shadow of God. Even as Abraham believed God and it was counted to him for, and the whole dunamis thing is about righteousness.
Yeah, Michael, I remember a couple years ago as I was trying to sort this out about personal faith. And of course, Abraham was always our hero of faith.
Yes.
And I remember it must have been you and Don. I don't remember a specific teaching that you were doing, but I know you talked about it many times. About understanding that Abraham was a type of Christ and not us, you know, because
yes,
we were always taught, you know, believe like Abraham, even like this, just as Abraham believed God and it was accounted unto him for righteousness. But the next verse, therefore know that only those who are of faith are the sons of Abraham. Maybe I should read one more. And the scripture foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel to Abraham beforehand, saying, in you all the nations of the earth shall be blessed.
Yeah.
And so it's not a matter of us believing. It was Abraham who was a type and shadow of Christ. As his belief brought in righteousness, so would his seed. And I don't think we'll get there today, but that's the teaching that Paul goes into here in chapter 3, is it specifically the seed, which is Christ, and it's his faith. And again, it fits the context because when he rebuked James, Peter, and John, he says, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who gave his life for me.
Well, and all of that is just a perfect picture. So I think this would be accurate to say, Daniel, you don't have to have faith when you live in the one who has the faith.
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And that's true in Abraham, that's true in Christ. Why are you teaching people they need faith when they live, the one and they live in and the one lives in them? I see that now. That's why they had lost the image of Christ in them.
Mm.
How did they lose it? They lost it through their personal faith.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, one thing I always think about the Bible is, you know, we in America, we come a lot of times with the Western ideals, you know, of a government and different things. But if you think about the Jewish mind and the culture of the day, it was all about the lineage. Yeah. It was all about the birth line. And if you think about, we have two birth lines here. We have those who were of Abraham.
Yeah.
And we also see later on in this chapter about Moses. And one was faith and one was the law. And as we've already brought out, they've kind of made a hybrid there. And they changed the lineage almost of both of them because of we're going to see as we go on the power of being in that lineage from Moses is that also made you acceptable for the faith of God. But we won't get ahead of ourselves. Wow. But my point is, you got these two lines going here, but they merged those two and made something different, something that was never, God never wanted the mixture of the two.
Yes.
You know, if you do a little bit of law and do a little bit of faith, what are they doing? They're totally changed their lineage. And now all that's left is that personal relationship. It's not about Abraham. It's not about Moses. It's not about Jesus. It's about me.
Yep. And that the line of David, and David is the one who said, "Blessed is the man whom God makes righteous, who hasn't done anything right." And Abraham was through the faith of Abraham, and we have the declaration of righteousness and of faith through those two lineages, the lineage of Abraham and David, and not the lineage of Moses. So they have come up here with, they're trying to include, you're exactly right, Daniel. They're trying to include Moses in the seed.
Yeah.
And Moses is not in the seed.
Mm-mm.
The law is not a part of the seed whatsoever.
No.
That's so powerful.
Well, there's one more verse here, Michael. And, okay. I have a question for you then. Verse 9, so then those who are of faith are blessed with believing Abraham. And I think I heard you talk about this before, but what is that blessing?
Oh, that blessing is right here in Galatians. And that the blessing was the righteousness. Abraham's blessing was not cattle and lands, but the blessing of Abraham. In verse 6 says, even as Abraham believed God and it was counted to him for
righteousness,
not cattle.
Yeah.
It was accounted to him for righteousness. You know, we were saying, I'm blessed in the basket and I'm blessed in the store and blessed at Walmart and going out the door. And jeez. But as you go on down through this, you will see that the promise that came to us that we live in Abraham is righteousness. That is the promise.
And I love that. In you, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, be righteous. Wow. All of them.
Yeah. And in verse 9, we got to take that in before we close out here then. It says, so then, they which be of, that we talked about prepositions. Guess which preposition that is?
Ek.
The good old ek, out of. For then they which be out of faith are blessed with faithful Abraham, because we came out of his faith.
So it's not your ability to respond to faith.
Yeah.
It's not your ability to hear faith. It's not your ability to work any part of the law, any part of the law. It's simply a universal fact because of Christ's faith, because of Christ's finished work of the cross. We're all blessed. We're all righteous. We're all holy. We're all blameless.
It is not our job to duplicate Abraham's faith, and it certainly is not our job to duplicate Christ's faith.
And anything other than that is foolish.
It is foolishness, and you've been robbed.
Mm.
If you are trying to duplicate the faith of Abraham to receive the blessing of righteousness, if you are trying to duplicate the faith of Christ so that you can have salvation, you are a fool.
I felt that one.
Yep. I don't know that I can take any more, dude.
No, I think that was rich.
And that's why we've slowed down to a snail's pace here, folks. is because, I mean, I've never, ever stopped and looked at the word miracles. I just thought miracle. How did I know that they had taken the word miracle and imposed it over the word dunamis? And that Paul used the word dunamis in connection to righteousness. And we've got, did you see how we read through that? And all of a sudden we've got people growing out legs and all kinds of, walking and the lame walking and the blind seeing. But it has nothing to do with that at all. He that has ministered the spirit of righteousness to you has done it with great power. That's what this verse says.
Wow.
And how foolish you are to think under your own power now you are going to attain what has already been attained. How much more foolish could one be to try to attain what they've already received?
And so it is, we must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the gospel revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. You can find us on your favorite social media network, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Please be sure to hit that subscribe, share, and like button on whatever platform you are listening. Now, it's good night from Daniel Rouse in the frozen tundra.
And it's good night from Michael Williams. And again, thanking you all for participating in our pledge drive and making it successful. We really do appreciate it. And as you can see, we've got so much to do. We honestly do need more staff, to tell you the truth. We need people to do more things. We really do need it. And to have that, we're going to have more. I can't take Daniel's salary and split it between him and somebody else. I can't even take mine and split it between me and somebody else. We love you guys. And this is what we're doing. We don't do anything else. We're not going to change our minds because somebody offers us a lot of money either. It just isn't going to happen. While we depend on funds to continue what we're doing will never be dictated by funds, the lack of them or the influx of them. Neither one is going to change our minds. Not to say that our minds can't be changed, but they'll be changed by legitimate means, not by some illegitimate means.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again. I don't know, Michael. Do you think you can?
Lord, you're making this harder every time, Daniel. But if I keep saying better, I guess that means it's going to be better.
Because you have whatsoever you say it.
Yeah.
Deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes. You are listening to
Gospel Revolution.